This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica stations and affiliates. The state of Arkansas has been racing to kill 8 death row inmates by lethal injection before its stores of a particular drug expire. Court orders have blocked 4 out of the 8 executions. So far, 3 men named Liddell Lee, Jack Jones, and Marcel Williams have already been executed. Jones and Williams were killed on Monday. It was the first time in 17 years in the entire nation that a double execution was carried out. The 4th man, Kenneth Williams, is scheduled to die on Thursday night. This grisly spate of state killings has drawn national attention once more to the American death penalty. My guest is Jessica Brand. She's the legal director of the Fair Punishment Project, which is an initiative of Harvard Law School. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
So of the first man who was executed by Arkansas, that happened last week, Liddell Lee, what do you think people need to know about his case? Your organization put out a report detailing the problems in the cases of all 8 men. Why was Liddell Lee in particular a case that many consider a travesty that he was killed?
Sure. I think Liddell's case lays bare all that is rotten in the American death penalty system across the country. We premise our death penalty on 2 things. One is that the death penalty only be applied to the worst of the worst, so the most culpable people in this country. And that's something the Supreme Court has said. And the second is that before we execute people, they will have effective representation, counsel who looks into their life history and litigates their case and argues their case to the jury. And Liddell Lee lacked that from start to nearly finish until just 2 weeks before his execution. So here are what his lawyers were like. His trial lawyers were conflicted out of the case. They tried to get off the case. They begged the judge to remove them. They begged the Arkansas Court of Appeals to remove them. And then they conducted no investigation into Liddell's life history. Then he had a drunk state post-conviction attorney. He
actually said the words attorney?
Blah, blah, a drunk attorney in court. He said the words blah, blah, blah in a court proceedings, which is just an incredible thing. Then when a court said, maybe Mr. Lee should get a do-over, his new lawyers basically filed the same pleadings as his drunk lawyers. They missed a filing deadline. They had two briefs sent back because they failed to comply with court rules. I mean, really incredible things. And then his federal habeas lawyer eventually had his law license suspended due to a mental illness that prevented him from representing clients. That's an incredible litany of things to happen to one defendant. And what that meant was just 2 weeks before his execution date, the ACLU really heroically tried to intervene and do for the first time an investigation into Liddell's case. And what they found was he may have an intellectual disability. He had a very low IQ score. He had fetal alcohol syndrome, and he had disciplinary abuse and poverty. I mean, really the kinds of things that cause juries to spare people's lives in the first place that may make someone categorically ineligible for the death penalty because of an intellectual disability. And no one, until 2 weeks before his execution, bothered to look. And you see that in case after case where lawyers just failed their clients, really making a sham of this system where we think you get lawyers, you get representation, you get hearings before you are executed. That's just a lie, and Liddell's case really shows that.
And then on Monday, Arkansas killed 2 men in one day, Marcel Wayne Williams and Jack Jones. I mentioned it was the first time in 17 years anywhere in the country that a double execution was carried out. I'm assuming that these 2 men also had cases that really were problematic in how they ended up being convicted and sentenced rather to death.
Sure, it's the same exact thing. I mean, in Jack Jones' case, you see he has horribly crippling bipolar disorder. He was abused as a child by his father. His sisters were sexually abused by his father. I mean, this is just what permeated his household, his childhood, throughout his life leading up to the crime. Of course, no jury ever heard that. His defense lawyer spent no more than $6,000, maybe $500 on experts and on that preparing that defense. And so, too, with Marcel Williams, and this is chronicled in court opinions and this clemency petition, his mother pimped him out to men and women starting when he was 9 for food stamps.
Goodness.
And for, I mean, that's incredible. And that kind of trauma, if you think that doesn't affect your life, your reasoning, your ability to cope, you're living in a dream world. And that's the kind of thing that no lawyer ever uncovered until really it was too late, until decades after they were convicted of these crimes. And then there was this rush to put them to death so that no one ever really fully considered this evidence.
So let's talk about why the rush, as Kenneth Williams, the fourth man's life, hangs in the balance. Why the rush? Arkansas is worried that its lethal injection, one of the drugs that it uses in its lethal injections, will expire. How can that be a valid enough reason to rush these men to death?
Yeah, I think, you know, the governor would probably tell you that the expiring drug, yes, he would not like it to be rushed in this way, but that these men have had decades to litigate their claims. That's what he said. But of course, if you look at Liddell Lee's case, or Jack Jones's case, or Marcel Williams's case, or Kenneth Williams's case that's scheduled for tomorrow, those decades have been meaningless because they've had bad lawyering. So you can sit in jail for 20, 25, 30, 40 years, and if you've had bad lawyers, it doesn't matter at all. So he set this artificial deadline with kind of the false premise that these men have had time and access to courts and justice, but that's a lie. And Liddell's case lays that bare, and so does Marcel's, and Jack's, and Kenneth's. All of these cases uniformly show what a lie that is.
So hasn't the, don't states like Arkansas have a tough time getting access to these drugs? Because many of the companies that produce these drugs don't like the idea of them being used to subdue inmates before they are put to death. Haven't we even had lawsuits about the cruelty of using these drugs because they don't sometimes work effectively enough, and then you have long periods of excruciating suffering?
Right. There are a couple things. In Arkansas, for example, there was a lawsuit filed by McKesson. They said they were really duped into selling Arkansas one of these drugs.
This is a company, one of the companies producing the drugs?
Mm-hmm. Correct. They work with Pfizer. Pfizer doesn't want their drugs to be used in executions. They think it's immoral. And McKesson says, we didn't know that's how you were using it. Prisons order these drugs all the time because they can be used for various procedures. And Arkansas was quite careful to make sure that the company would never find out it would be used for execution. So that was only found later. Another one of the drugs Arkansas got from an anonymous donor in a parking lot. I mean, it was
really kind of
shady stuff.
An anonymous donor in a parking lot?
I can't remember if it was in a parking lot or she picked it up somewhere and put it in the trunk of her car. I mean, that's what came out in the litigation. It's really astounding stuff. And it's because these companies don't want their drugs to be used in such a way, both because a lot of them have problems with the death penalty, but also we have seen they can cause torture. We saw that in the state of Oklahoma when Clayton Lockett was executed and was literally tortured by the execution drugs. And Oklahoma has just yesterday released a report saying we should continue a moratorium on capital punishment in the state because we don't know how to do it safely. We don't know how to do it without torturing men. And just on the last execution, there is some witness testimony that suggests that the midazolam didn't work for Jack Jones, that he was moving his lips and heaving after the application of the first drug. So you see that in Arkansas, you saw that in Oklahoma, and that's why there's so much litigation around these drugs.
There's so many issues to unpack here. It's no coincidence that of the 8 men that were initially singled out for execution, a good number of them were black men. It's also no coincidence that they were probably all men from low-income backgrounds. Of course, the issue of how they are executed, the kind of representation they've gotten, all of these issues have made states around the country take a hard look at the death penalty. And in many states, you have de facto moratoriums or even official moratoriums. Where does Arkansas stand on this? Clearly, it seems as though Arkansas doesn't seem to have that same problem. But it has been several years since even Arkansas executed anybody, right?
Right. It's been since 2005 since Arkansas executed someone. I mean, I think what you see in these Arkansas cases is just what you said. You see people of color. You see people from extreme poverty with extraordinary trauma in their lives. And that is what you see in all these states. And I think as people start actually understanding these stories, you know, I had a friend of mine say very recently, and he's a conservative friend. We don't normally see eye to eye, but he said, I just had no idea this horrible child abuse you see. I can't even punish my children. It makes me cringe. It makes me so sad. It makes me want to cry. How could people be treated like that? Well, that's how all of these men were treated as children. And that what we're seeing is that has an effect and that there's no great outcome when that's what happens to people as kids, when they have that kind of trauma. And then they end up as these defendants after we failed to take care of them when we could have. I think as people start to realize that's what's happening, their taste for such a harsh form of punishment is really abating.
What impact did Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch have on these cases? I mean, I know that your organization was among those that appealed to the Supreme Court to stay these executions, right?
Sure. I mean, I think if you think of him as a replacement for Justice Scalia, probably none. But if you think of this as a stolen Supreme Court seat that should have been Justice Merrick Garland's, maybe a lot. You know, in Liddell Lee's case, there were 4 votes to grant the stay of execution. So obviously one more and all of these men would still be alive. So it's a pretty profound difference when you consider that there was an Obama appointee who was blocked for, you know, a year from a seat that constitutionally should have been his.
And that might have voted against these executions. What about the 4 men whose executions have been blocked? Is that a done deal, or, you know, where does their fate lie?
Right. Well, there are a couple of things going on. One is Arkansas' supply of midazolam will expire on April 30th. So it may be that these men will remain on death row for quite some time because Arkansas has no alternative way to carry out its executions right now. But whether their death sentences are overturned, it remains to be seen. Stacey Johnson has access to DNA testing like Liddell Lee. He raised a claim of innocence. The Arkansas State Supreme Court held his execution so he could have access to that testing. And you may see that he was an innocent man. And I would hope if testing showed that, the state of Arkansas would remove him from the row. He would be exonerated. And then for the others, there's a lot of issues about whether they had access to experts in their case, and that's why 2 of their cases were stayed, because the state of Arkansas, in addition to denying people meaningful access to attorneys, also really denies them access to experts to help them unpackage all of the mental health issues and the effects of trauma and potential intellectual disabilities. They're not giving defendants independent experts. And so that was why 2 of those cases were stayed. They're waiting for a U.S. Supreme Court decision on that issue. And then Jason McGahee's case, he was granted clemency, and the governor recommended clemency, and the governor is now deciding whether to grant him clemency, both because he was very young at the time of the offense, his degree of involvement, he was involved in the crime, but whether he was the final man to actually kill the person who died in that case is questionable. And there's an extraordinary amount of trauma in his background that was uncovered much later in the game. So his case is being recommended for clemency at this point, and that would obviously take him off death row.
And the report that your organization put out, putting some of these facts together, can be found on your website, fairpunishment.org. It lists all 8 men's backgrounds, the reasons why their cases are so problematic, the traumas that they suffered through, and the things that basically didn't enter into the court decisions that ended up convicting and sentencing them. at this point, what stands between these men and their deaths? Is there, you know, activism? Are people on the ground in Arkansas writing to their governor? How are people around the country watching these state executions, which the U.S. really stands out from the rest of the industrialized world on? How are people to do something about this? Is there any recourse?
I mean, I think call and write and exercise your right to vote and make your voice heard. I mean, there's always a lot of support for harsh punishments. People are very loud. And if you've watched what's happened in Arkansas and you're horrified by it and you realize what a broken system, the system of capital punishment is, you know, you can make your voices heard both by voting, by calling your governor, by calling your senator, by writing to people who really have agency in this process. And of course, there's lawyers who are still working on behalf of Kenneth Williams. And look, the Supreme Court is still an institution that can put an end to this. I think what's really important here is the Supreme Court, as I said, has premised its rulings in capital punishment on the idea that people have counsel, right? That the Sixth Amendment was real and that someone would investigate someone's life and actually present it to a jury, to the prosecutor, who would make meaningful arguments on behalf of their client. And what the Supreme Court knows now after Liddell Lee's case and Jack Jones's case and Marcel Williams' case, if it didn't know it before, is that that's false. So there is still the possibility for the Supreme Court to finally stop being complicit in this very broken system and end it. And there are voices on the court who have suggested that it's time, and the question is whether another one of them can be moved to make that decision.
Well, we're speaking on Wednesday, and Kenneth Williams is scheduled to be executed Thursday night. We'll see what happens with that case. Jessica, I want to thank you so much for the work that you do and for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest is Jessica Brand, legal director of the Fair Punishment Project, an initiative of Harvard Law School. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.